Welcome to Bridge Ed, the education podcast brought to you by The Bridge at Wellington College. I'm Ian Henderson, and I'm excited to be joined by a host of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in our sector.
Okay. So, hello, Shane Laney.
It is a pleasure to be here. Hello.
And it's so exciting that you're here, and it's the Festival of Education. And the weather is beautiful, and there's ice cream, which for me tops all things, except that we are also celebrating the publication of your new book.
This is mad, hey? But I've got to also say that I am very excited about ice cream because I live in Shanghai, and you can't get a good mint choc chip out in Shanghai, so I've just been like going for it, like gorging on the ice cream here.
You should. I mean, I was asking friends last night if it's possible just to live on ice cream.
What was their answer?
Maybe for 3 days.
That sounds like a challenge.
I'm thinking about it. So.
Yeah, super exciting times. Hey, like, yeah. I'm still in that bit of a dizzy mode actually, where it doesn't quite feel real that there's a, I'm looking at the book in front of me and going, what?
Probably people have asked you these sorts of questions a lot already. There's been talk for a long time about how to engage humanely in change management. Mm-hmm. And there's always been a lot of talk about schools as being an interesting combination of places that can be innovative and also deeply entrenched in habit.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me how you came up with the magic solution for schools.
Well, okay, there is no magic solution. That's yeah. That's the shame. And it was kind of, this all came about quite organically, actually. Me and my wonderful, wonderful colleague and co-author, Ephraim, who I know you know, he's just the most beautiful soul, and we connected right away on two different things, really. I was... at the time, noticing in a lot of my work, I'm very privileged to work with a lot of schools around the world and a lot of leadership teams especially. And what I was just starting to notice is that over the last 10 years or so, we have had what seems to be an increase in leaders who are just feeling less confident, an increase in teachers who are feeling less confident, an increase in people who just work in schools who are feeling not as confident in their profession and in their knowledge. And I found this interesting and sad, being an educator myself, because it also seemed to correlate with an increase in outside voices. So, for example, so many governments are more and more involved in education, like they're schools are joining groups in scale so that they're kind of outsourcing their decision making not to a group level rather than a school level, and there are more and more products and services available to schools. And I think over time, like, this started off as this wonderful opportunity for schools to reach into scale and learn new things, but over time what's happened is that schools have just slowly started outsourcing decision making outside the school walls, which has left schools in a slightly vulnerable place where they're not feeling confident to enact really good change for themselves. So that's kind of where I was coming from. And my colleague Ephraim, we started talking online actually. We wrote this whole book online without meeting each other actually. We only met each other last year after we finished writing the book. But he reached out and said, Shane, this really resonates with me, but I'm coming from it a slightly different angle. I think schools do need more confidence, but I think they've got answers in front of them. I don't think they're leaning into their communities in a way that would really help them. And I'm trying to work out that. And we thought, well, let's do some thinking together. And at some point, that turned into a book, and I don't have a clue when. I don't remember, neither of us remember when we decided to start writing this. It just started. And it's been a wonderful journey.
It's so interesting, this idea of schools not looking inward. And I think that's true. And it's so important to contextualize problems. Mm. Not everything can be scaled outward.
Yes.
And then there's the whole human element. And if you are looking inward for solutions and you're valorizing the voices of those within your community who mm. want to contribute to change, then you are empowering people. And I don't know what you'll think of this, but and with some of the colleagues and friends I have, we speak quite a bit about the problem of the deprofessionalization
yes.
of teaching and a deintellectualization
yes.
of teaching. That yeah. so much of the conversation seems to be on the level of the technical and the managing. How do you manage something?
Yes.
Do you control something? When maybe what we ought to be doing is liberating things.
That's right. I think I read a book, Kusuma and Powell, about, about teacher development, and I think they said something, it's time to reclaim our profession. And how odd that there's many people who think that education isn't owned by the educators and the communities that are there, and actually that, you know, it's coming from somewhere else. And I think, to your point, we've seen this rise, which has been good in many ways, in codification, where we're trying to codify everything. And I think while that has brought some wonderful insight, and we've managed to kind of start to understand, you know, what happens in the brain when, you know, we're learning, and we're learning all these things. But when you codify something, the negative of that is you dehumanize, because we don't live in codes. Humans aren't codes. And then when you think about a school community, like, what is a school? Well, it's a collection of human beings. It's a collection of adults and children kind of negotiating a space together for an aim that still we can't fully understand what the aim is, but, you know, it exists somewhere. And I would argue it exists in that interaction. And therefore, if education is about interactions, then it has to be led on a local level.
That's such a cool question. I sort of want to ask everybody outside this building, and there's a lot of people out there right now.
Oh my goodness, it's a bit overwhelming.
What's the purpose? What are we here for?
Yeah.
Well,
you find I think festivals like this are fascinating because there is always a divide in these kind of places and the different tents. So you might go to one area and they're talking about, you know, really interesting research, for example, from a synthesis from Education Endowment Foundation, for example, who go, here are the best bets for learning. But of course, mostly what they're measuring is the exam results at the end of school. So that, you know, but then we've got whole swathes of people at this festival who are talking about diversity, talking about human flourishing, talking about all these different areas which are not measurable in those exam results. And yet we are so obsessed with research evidence that can be measured through that method that, You know, we're losing something. And I know there are those who are constantly trying to push towards this codified, kind of standardized place of education for good reasons, trying to equalize and to make sure there's success for all. But it's just not possible. It's not possible. Unless we want to talk ourselves out of job and get AI to run the schools. And maybe I was saying to someone yesterday at the pub, I was saying, I'm a bit worried that at the same time as we've got codification being celebrated by much of the, you know, influential voices in the sector, we've also got the rise of technology that actually is probably able to do what they're saying themselves because it's codified and that works well. And then that, well, are we talking ourselves out of a job, and are we talking ourselves into a dangerous place where human interaction isn't part of education?
Well, and you know, you mentioned the human flourishing, and that is certainly something that I know here at Wellington is it's a real area of focus. And Ian Henderson speaks, you know, quite eloquently about its importance, and this needs to be the focus of education in the coming 10, 20, 30 years. And I really think about that. You know, why is that? Why? Because I can't imagine that we ever thought education was about making people wither. So if we're focusing on flourishing, what's driving that? Is it that tension that you're describing? Is it a fear, in fact, of losing control in a way of the purpose of schools or the functioning of schools because of technology, because of, you know, any number of things? And it makes me wonder if we might do well to spend a bit more time thinking in terms of systems and structures that are above, you know, the tensions of ed tech and assessment and attainment and human flourishing and diversity and all these other things. You know, what is it about the world in which we live right now that is driving the concerns that we have, which may be expressed in very different ways,
yes,
but that I suspect come out of concern, anxiety, fear.
Yeah.
In which case, well, we might just want to go right to the root cause.
Yeah. I love the way you frame that. And what comes out of these kind of conversations for me is that there is a lot of fear in the world, but that fear is so diverse, like in what we're fearful of. And I mean, I learned a lot writing this book with Ephraim Lerner, who, Jewish, used to be a rabbi, you know, very different from my background, and his fears are very different to my fears. And we've been on this beautiful learning journey together. And what I found was our success in kind of this collaboration was being open to each other and accepting of each other, even though we've come from entirely different backgrounds. And I think there's something to be learned about that in our schools. Like, I mean, I maybe lean slightly heavily on the localization area. I think on the book we say, what if your school, you know, what if everything your school needed was right in front of you? Because I do believe that schools know their areas best. And I think there's a place where they interact with expertise and outside voice. But before you do that, you have to understand yourself. And the scary thing is, as I think, when you've got an anxiety or you've got a fear, you look for a solution. You kind of look outside, and there's usually someone or something that's saying that they can solve it for you. I do a lot of training with schools about working with external providers, and we talk about sales tactics. One of the best sales tactics that's used is called identifying the customer's pain point. What's their pain point? And how do we help them with that pain point? Well, I have like a big problem with that as a tactic. One, you know, the idea of searching for pain in schools and then trying to offer a solution for that is manipulative and problematic. But two, schools have a million pain points at any one time. And I think, you know, even just walking around this wonderful festival here, looking at all the vendors here, or if you go to somewhere, I'll tell you, it's a bit different actually. Here's got a slightly different vibe, but if you went to BET, I don't know if you've ever been to one of the BET conferences.
No, I've always been a little scared of that.
It terrifies me.
Yes.
Terrifies me. You walk down there, you go into this big conference hall, and then you walk these corridors, and everyone is trying to sell you something, every company. And the reality is, though, is that every one of those companies believes that they've got the product for you because they know your pain point better than you do. What they're good at is then articulating it to a school and saying, is this a problem for you? Which a school inevitably goes, yeah, that is a problem for me, because they've got loads. And then you jump into a solution before you even have gone, what is the biggest thing that we want to work on? Where is our community at? What have we talked about? Where are we at as a school? And what's our most sensible next step? And then who can we find to support us in that journey?
I'm a big believer in sort of self-evaluation for school improvement,
yes,
and just studying what we're doing and trying to have as much as possible a kind of objective eye.
Yes.
You know, what do we do in class? What policies do we have? You know, what's the documentation look like? What is the quality of exchanges that takes place? And yes. then looking at ourselves in the mirror of ourselves, then we see, oh, okay, that's good. And that's, well, not so good. And
yes.
and you really do, I think, find ways to discover the answers yourself. And as you're saying, only when you've identified a problem or a question, let's go with a question. Mm. You've identified a question that you want to answer. And when you've done that self-reflection, then you might go outside. But you have the question. It's not the outside telling you.
Exactly.
And I think that's really key.
I couldn't agree more. We frame it in our book. We've used some design thinking, like in a model, and we would say for every change, you have kind of three main steps. Every change starts with a perceived challenge somewhere. And at some point, you move that perceived challenge into a goal. And then at some point, you move that goal into a solution. So three steps. The problem is that what normally happens is a perceived challenge comes along, and the perception is usually owned by what we call a sponsor, someone who sponsors that change, someone who's kind of, and it's their goal, their thing that they want to do. And that might have been introduced. So I am sure there's many people who will come to a great festival like this, go back to their schools and do that really annoying thing where they say, I went to a great talk last week and they said we should do this. So let's get going. Let's do this. And so this is what always happens. But what often people jump from perceived challenge to a goal, they switch it into a goal like that. Now, what we advocate for is actually there's a lot of work before you turn a challenge into a goal. And the main piece of work you do is by looking internally and asking yourself, like, what's the real challenge here? What's the real challenge? Is this right? And is this just my perception? What if I let go of my ego for a second and leaned into my community? Is my challenge their challenge? Have we ever talked about this? And only once you kind of answered that together can you start to do the work of turning that into a goal. And we think that's actually the biggest part of the process, is in between the challenge and the goal, not actually between the goal and the solution.
But I think there's something else that precedes that in a way, and that is the culture that
yes.
you create within the community that allows people to be at ease with the moment of flux
yes.
of uncertainty where you're exploring.
Yes.
And that is a beautiful thing and a challenging thing, because
super challenging.
People are complicated.
Yeah, beautifully complicated. And you start this with connection, don't you? Like, how well connected. In our book, we go through 40 questions that can kind of, you can dip in and out to go through a change. And the first question we actually ask is to ask your team, when was the last time you felt heard? When was the last time you felt heard? Asking the parents, when was the last time you felt heard? Because asking the teachers that, asking the students that, because building that level of psychological safety, like the great work of Amy Edmondson, for example, a big fan of some of the stuff she does. When we can ask our team, when was the last time you actually felt heard? We might start to uncover that some people go, I've never really felt heard, and therefore I don't want to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never raised my voice. Or maybe they do feel heard in a certain setting. Maybe they go, do you know what? When I'm in the staff room speaking with a number of members of staff, and we just kind of, I feel really heard by them when I'm reflecting on what happened in the morning, you know, with my coffee. And maybe that's really useful information to kind of think, where do people feel they're most heard? Where do students feel heard? Where do parents feel heard? Because until you've grappled with people's sense of safety and being able to raise things and talk about things, I mean, good luck doing a change, because it's going to be really difficult. And in fact, you see this in a lot of the traditional change models, where one of the steps of the change, usually like step 4 or 5, is generating buy-in. And we've gone, well, then maybe this is our problem. Maybe we're obsessed with deciding what to do and then generating mm-hmm. buy-in. Like, this is what we're doing. Now I've got to tell everyone and get everyone on board, rather than going, can we start a bit earlier and actually say, can we co-develop a goal together? And if we co-develop a goal, when we turn to a solution, do we have to as aggressively get buy-in? Well, I think when schools do it that way, they don't. It takes longer. It's a messier process. But I think in the long term, you're probably much more likely to get a sustainable solution that secures your school culture.
Well, I don't want us to give everything away, because we want people to be reading Change Starts Here. and I risk oversimplifying, but the question of, you know, where do you feel heard, or when was the last time you felt heard, seems like a good starting point for change.
Yes.
So thank you so much. It's lovely talking with you. And oh, so goodness. Glad you were able to be here. And really super congratulations to you and Ephraim.
Thank you so much. What an absolute privilege to be here. Thanks, Karen.
Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from Bridge Ed. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.